Welcome to Food for Thought, the place to explore, celebrate, and manifest a life motivated and defined by unconditional compassion and optimal wellness. Today's episode is Zero Waste Water, Rain Tanks, and Gray Water Plumbing. That sounds really technical. It's so interesting, and I hope you enjoy this episode. Before we begin, my name is Colleen Patrick-Goudreau. You can find me at joyfulvegan.com and on social media. You can find my books wherever books are sold, and you can join me in my online cooking classes or in my vegan trips, Europe, Africa, Asia, just saying, over at joyfulvegan.com. You can find more information. And this podcast is possible because of the support of listeners like you. You can join other supporters by going to patreon.com/ColleenPatrickGoudreau and becoming a supporter today at your chosen level. Thank you so much in advance for supporting this podcast, for subscribing to this podcast, and for listening to this podcast. I'm not sure if you can hear, but Charlie is sitting on my lap and he is purring like a little motor. Hi, my name is Colleen and I'm obsessed with water. I really am obsessed with water. Now, this may be because I live in a drought state. I live in California. That might have something to do with it. But so does my awareness that I am responsible for doing what I can to live as consciously and compassionately as possible. If you've listened to a few of these podcast episodes, you know I started endeavoring to live quote unquote zero waste a few years ago. And I say that in quotes, even though you can't see me doing air quotes right now, because it's aspirational rather than entirely possible to live fully zero waste. But I do the best I can. And the definition of zero waste that I love the most, it's not about perfection and purity at all, just like I don't associate veganism with perfection and purity. Rather, it's about valuing what we bring into our lives or what we already have in our lives. And valuing something means putting it to use. And so while I started formally talking about zero waste principles really just a few years ago now, they have been something I've aspired to live by for decades. I just didn't call these principles zero waste. I didn't call what I was doing zero waste. When it comes to water, using it and wasting it, the idea that it's a natural resource that's scarce in many places around the world and that we should take advantage of while we can and conserve in various ways has always been on my mind. It's been on my mind for a long time. I was thinking as I was writing this that it may have been around the time I read Frank Herbert's novel Dune, which I would have been a teenager when I did. This is a science fiction novel that's about many things, but it's also about water scarcity. And while I read that novel when I was a teenager, I actually became obsessed with the film adaptation, which was made by David Lynch in 1984. And I actually, while I was writing this, I remembered that I wrote a paper about Dune in college, about the hero's journey. Completely different story, but I was just remembering how much this movie had an impact on me in several different ways. Now, that's not to say that when I read this book or watched this movie about water scarcity that I became an environmentalist on the spot or a water conservationist at that point, but it definitely helped shape my thoughts about and sparked an interest in understanding what a political issue water is. And if Dune isn't the movie to convince you of that, if you don't know what I'm talking about, then just watch Roman Polanski's 1974 film Chinatown, which brings me to California. The politics of water in Chinatown in the movie, and specifically in Los Angeles in the movie, is really the backdrop to an even darker plot of incest and rape. And while that aspect of the film is fictional, the crimes and politics and corruption and cover-up about the politics of water in California and Los Angeles in particular are all true. Or at least they're based on a true history and on real people, which are even more intriguing than what's depicted in the film. But see, the film love Chinatown. If you're interested in learning more about water and politics in California, and specifically about the Los Angeles Aqueduct in particular, which again might not sound interesting, but it really is, you would have heard of William Mulholland, I'm sure, because many people have heard of Mulholland Drive in California, in Los Angeles, and you would have heard of that David Lynch movie called Mulholland Drive. But the man, William Mulholland, was a real person. That's who the street is named after. And the story about Mulholland and the Los Angeles Aqueduct, which is dramatized in Chinatown, is absolutely fascinating. And I really encourage you to read more about that. I also encourage you to read more and learn more about the expansion west and, of course, how that impacted not only the peoples who were here first and the animals and the land that were exploited. As people moved west, I really encourage you to watch Ken Burns' multi-episode documentary called The West. If you haven't seen it, it's harrowing, it's horrific, and it's a must-see. It is absolutely essential that I think we know about the history of the West, which I have been fascinated in for decades. I moved to California because I loved California, fell in love with California, and just what California has often held for people and people's imagination has always been really interesting to me, aside from the exploitation of the people who lived here and in the West. So I highly recommend watching Ken Burns' documentary, The West. I also recommend the book Cadillac Desert, The American West and Its Disappearing Water by Mark Reisner, if you've never read that book. All that's to say, water has always been a scarce commodity in a place with limited rainfall and where dams and other forms of water diversion and cattle ranches, as well as other forms of water waste, make water a major political issue in the West. And it's not unique to the United States, of course, to the Western United States, as listeners in Australia would know as well. So coupled with my inclination to do my part, to do the right thing, along with my awareness that I want to not only conserve water, but use the little water we have in the most effective way, with that in mind, back in our old house, so this would have been around 2005 or so, David and I bought three 300-gallon tanks that had once been used to store and ship soy lecithin. And a guy we found on Craigslist, he would buy these big containers from the port or from whomever once they were emptied, and he would sell these empty containers. Now, he's not the only one who does this. You may be surprised to find that there are people selling these near you or large tanks like this near you. So go search on Craigslist. I'm including photos at joyfulvegan.com so you can see what these tanks look like. Now, we bought these tanks to hold rainwater. And when we moved from our old house to this one, we brought those tanks with us, 300-gallon tanks. They're huge. Now, David curses them to this day because they do require a bit of maintenance if you're doing it right, if you want to keep using them. So when we first got them, David had to figure out, so I'm the one who comes up with the ideas, and then of course David is tasked with making sure we can use them. So that's the relationship we have. That's the relationship I think many couples have. So we got the tanks, and David had to figure out how to connect them to our rain gutters and to our drain pipes for the water to divert down into the tanks one after another, because it's not just getting them to fill up with water from the rain gutters, but also then how to have the water continue filling up from one tank to another. And that was laborious enough. He figured it out, bless his heart. But the hard part, I mean, I say that was easy. It wasn't easy. It's simple because it's just diversion, water diversion. But the hard part was figuring out how to get the water out of the tanks so we could water our gardens with it. Now, in the beginning, I channeled my Laura Ingalls. I would open the large spigot at the bottom. I would drain a bunch of water into a bucket or watering can, and I would carry that bucket to various plants and water them and repeat the process again and again and again. That got old really quickly. It was kind of cute and romantic in the beginning, and then it got old really quickly because we had 17 fruit trees. I mean, we planted a lot of gardens in our old house. And so trying to water each of these you know, with a bucket as I walked from back and forth to the water. It was laborious. So we got a pump. David got a pump. Now, you need to figure out how to connect that water hose to the spigot on the tank and then connect a pump and then connect a hose and a nozzle to the pump to force the water out with pressure. When I say you have to figure this out, I mean David figured this out. And again, it was simple. It wasn't easy. He would kill me if I said it was easy. And he would just say, well, if it's easy, go do it yourself. So again, it's more easy. It's more simple than easy. But he figured it out. Because you just need to make sure you have all the right thingamajigs. The hardest part was finding the adapters because there's different size spigots, et cetera, et cetera. But he figured it out. And he cursed me the entire time, but he figured it out. And it worked. And it worked for years in our old house. We didn't have irrigation in our old house for our many gardens. As I said, we planted 17 fruit trees at that house. We had vegetable gardens, raised beds that David built. Again, bless his heart. I was so impressed when I watched him build these raised beds. And I really hope that the people in that house who bought that house still enjoy these trees, because we planted every kind of fruit tree you could imagine. The area we lived in our old house, it was actually called the Laurel District, but it was right near the Fruit Vale. And the Fruit Vale is called the Fruit Vale for a reason. It's where the farms originally were in Oakland. And the soil is perfect, and the ground is level, and it was just rich, and we were able to grow so much in that old house. Very different in that place we're in now. Very different, and we're only a couple miles from that location. Very difficult to plant fruit trees. I've been having trouble, in fact. But in the old house, we had 17, and we used the water from our rain tanks to water all of these gardens and to water all of these trees, really these orchards. Then we moved. And we moved those tanks with us to this house, to Little Montali, the house we're in now. Different house, required a different location entirely for the tanks, and of course, a brand new setup. Now, in the other house, we had the tanks on the side of the house, just under the rain gutter, right against the house, because that's the way you capture the rainwater. You divert it from the gutter into the tanks, right? As opposed to having the gutter go to a drain pipe that goes down to the ground. We would take the gutter, we would divert the water to a pipe that would go into the tanks. And I should say this is also important for you to know if you set this up. We also had those tanks sitting up on wood pallets, because otherwise it would have been impossible to connect anything to the spigots at the bottom. You have to elevate the tanks somewhat, a foot, it doesn't have to be very high, but enough so that you could easily then get under the spigot to connect hoses or whatever you have to do. And so the space we had in the old house, again, this was in the Laurel District, very flat side of the house, easy to do, set up some pallets, put the tanks on top and set it up. Here, it's a very different setup. Our house is quite literally built into a hillside. So we have hillsides on either side of our house. And so it was impossible to put the tanks, three 300-gallon tanks right next to our house on the sides, because we'd have to level the hill. We're not going to level the hillsides, right? So that was impossible. And in the front and the back, where there is some leveling, it would have been absolute eyesores. These are, you know, big white plastic tanks. They're not exactly the most attractive things. And we also have limited space in the front and back. So same thing. It just would have been an eyesore, but kind of difficult to do. So we're trying to figure out what we're going to do with these. And I'm so glad we brought these tanks with us, because if we didn't, we never would have figured out where to put them. And we did figure out where to put them. Luckily, we have a structure, and this was built by previous owners, and I'm really grateful to them. If you've ever seen my stories or posts on Instagram or social media, you would see what is called a ramada. And a ramada is basically an open air structure. So basically open sides with a floor and a roof. And that structure, this ramada, sits right up against the fence of our property line. So the fence is our property line. And the other side of that fence, and again, when I say there's hillsides, I mean we are on a hill the entire way. On the other side of that fence is a hillside that's just basically open hillside. There's no structures. There's no house. This is, we don't see any structures, any house on the other side. It's technically, I would say that's the property line, you know, that separates our house from our neighbor's house or our property from our neighbor's property. But it's really just a back hillside of our neighbor's because you can't build anything on it. It's all hillside. However, it technically is an easement for PG&E, for our utility, Pacific Gas and Electric, to be able to have access so that they can go check the towers and all the electrical around this neighborhood. So it's an easement, meaning nothing will ever be built on it, meaning no one really goes up there. I've never even seen any technicians go up there. And it's just open land. So the only little beings who see those tanks are the deer and other critters. Nobody sees them. Nobody goes back there. And it was perfect to be able to set the tanks up because basically we were able to put the tanks on the other side of the fence that's just on the other side of the Ramada. And the Ramada, we were able to put a gutter. So we built a gutter on the back of the Ramada, small gutter, cut a hole in the fence, a small hole in the fence, and then rainwater diverts now from that back gutter directly into the tanks, right? So it's perfect. It was perfect. The only problem is it's a little harder to get to because you have to go all the way in the back, which is fine. There's a gate that goes to the tanks. Obviously, there's a gate. We needed to have access, and so you do need to check it every so often. You do have to maintain these tanks, and we obviously had to set them up, and it makes it a little more challenging. But so what? I mean, we were just lucky to be able to put 300 gallon tanks in a place where we'd be able to get that rainwater without it being an eyesore and without, you know, again, we weren't able to put them right next to our house. So it's been perfect. Now, the setup is similar. We took that same pump with us from the old house, and it just makes it a little difficult because, as I said, maintaining the tanks and the pump can be difficult, especially because they're on the hillside and there's ivy, and ivy takes over the pump and takes over the tanks. You know, we check them frequently, but there are months that go by that we don't go and look at the tanks. And, you know, there's growth and ivy. And even though I clear that area so that the deer can have access, because that's basically one of their thoroughfares, and that's where I get all of my poison oak from, it's not something we see all the time. And so the pump has conked out. It can be difficult. We have the pump next to the tanks, and then we have to run a hose from the pump through the fence so that we can access that water and water our gardens with it. So it's a little trickier, but we figured it out. When I say we, I mean David figured it out, and we do the best we can. And David does continue to curse me. I'm just going to say it right now. If David had the choice, he would not have these rain tanks because they can be a little more difficult. But again, it's just because of where we have them. But he does it because he loves me. And I'm part of it as well. I mean, I check the tanks and I'm checking the pump. But, you know, we all distribute different jobs in our households. And this is just one of the things that David tends to do. And I do the watering of the gardens and I do the maintaining of the gardens. But David does the maintaining of the pump. And so this enables us to water the back part of our garden, which is the sunniest part of our yard. Now, I want to say this and up front, at this point, after much trial and error, I have to say that water now from the rain tanks is supplemental. Whereas in the previous house, it was a much smaller property. We were able to manage it much more easily. We were able to use that water for our gardens. In this house, it's just not possible. I tried for years and years to just hand water the back gardens with water just from the rain tanks, but it proved impossible. While we do have mostly drought-tolerant plants back there, we don't have only drought-tolerant plants, and it was impossible for me to spend so much time hand-watering plants, and there was just never enough water. You know, we have 3 months of rain, ideally, but if we don't get rain in our winter months, we have 9 months of no rain. And so planting any new plants, having fruit trees, trying to do anything with vegetable gardens, and just relying on, you know, what would be ideally 900 gallons of water from the rain from just that season, it's impossible. And so we did add a smart irrigation system, and now we're at least able to water some of the back gardens with that 1,000 gallons, 900 gallons of rainwater we collect in the winter months, and then we supplement with that water, but we also have the smart irrigation system. So we're able to do both. And with the smart irrigation system that actually can tell how much moisture is in the soil, and we don't water throughout the winter using our irrigation system, we do the best we can, but at least we have 1,000 gallons, and it's actually more than 1,000 gallons. You know, if the rain stops and we don't have rain for a couple weeks, I'll use the water that's in the rain tanks. Obviously, I'll deplete that water, and then it rains again. This is, again, hopeful, and ideally it rains again if we're not in a drought, and then I'll use that water again. So it's more than just 1,000 gallons of water. It's however much I can use throughout the season while we're getting rain in those tanks. Now, let me say a few more things before I move on to gray water. The rainwater we collect in our tanks is used only for plant irrigation. We don't drink it. Now, there are ways you can go about drinking the water and making it potable. I don't do this with our rain tanks. You would need to figure this out beforehand. There's plenty of resources and experts who can help you, but we don't do this. Our water from the rain tanks is only for our plants. Now, we can water vegetables. We can water ornamentals. We can water whatever we want with this rain water. And the water can stay in the tanks indefinitely. As I said, I use what I can once the rain tanks are filled. They don't have to be filled all the way, but once we get rainwater in those tanks, I water the gardens, deplete those tanks, and they fill up again. But, you know, sometimes the water sits in the tanks for months. Sometimes they sit for weeks, and it's fine. That's one of the nice things about rainwater, is it can sit in those tanks. It's just rainwater sitting in plastic tanks. They can sit in there for months indefinitely without there being a concern when it's time to use that water to water the plants. So it's totally fine. Now, you want to make sure you keep your gutters clean, so a ton of debris and dirt don't get in your tanks, because then it would clog up the openings and make it hard for the water to get out. But it's not about toxicity to the plants. That's not a problem. You just want to keep your gutters clean so that the debris doesn't get in the tanks themselves. So that's how we take advantage of the little rainwater we get here in California. Now, we do get rain. I think people think we don't get any rain. Our winter's our rain season. Like, we don't have rain in the summer. It's very rare for it to rain in the summer. I think we had some like last June, which was weird to have any rain in the summertime. Our rainy season is around December, January, February. You know, we did have rainy seasons that used to go into March and April. And a few years ago, we actually had rain that went into April. But really, our rainy months are sometimes November, but it's mostly December, January, February, March. And this year, we're kind of moving into a drought year again. We're just not getting the rain that we need. So it's so frustrating. So we take advantage of what little rain we do get, and we're happy for that. Zero waste, using rain, using water. What about, though, all of that amazing water we generate every single day when we shower or brush our teeth or wash our hands in our sinks? What about that water? Of course, I was interested in using that water that's called gray water instead of having all that valuable water, right? Value and use, valuable water, instead of it running right into the city sewer, I wanted to use that water. Now, let me give you a few terms. White water is the term used to describe the water that comes in from the city, from the municipal water, you know, company, into our faucets that we use for drinking, we use for showering, we use for doing dishes, right? We use for irrigation. That's white water. Black water is water that comes into contact with fecal matter. So that's water in our toilets. Frankly, it's water that would come into fecal matter if you're washing diapers down the drain, you know, that water that's going into sinks, right? That's black water, water that comes into contact with fecal matter, and that goes into the sewer. And of course, it's the toilet water. And then there's gray water. Gray water is the water that's left after washing, bathing, cooking, cleaning, running the dishwasher, running the washing machine. Unlike white water, gray water may contain soap particles. It may contain fat and oil from cooking, may contain hair, even flakes of human skin. And the exact contents of gray water, of course, depend heavily on the household producing it. So if you want to start reusing your gray water, you have to start regulating exactly what you send down the drain. And we will get back to this. So when we were renovating our kitchen and our downstairs bathroom here in this new house in Little Montali, I should say renovating the kitchen and adding a bath because we removed the bathroom that the previous owners had put in the kitchen. There was a bathroom in the kitchen. Yes. Yes, there was. No more. We took the bathroom out of the kitchen. We just felt that it just was the right thing to do. And that's when we decided to gray water our plumbing. It was just the perfect time to do it because our contractor was installing new sinks and new plumbing and diverting pipes and that kind of thing. So it was easy to do. But it's not difficult to do. You can certainly do it yourself. You could find YouTube videos, more power to you, but hire a plumber worth his or her salt and they can do it for you. Now, when you do this, when you gray water, I'm using that as a verb, but you know what I'm saying. When we gray watered our plumbing, you want to make sure that you reserve the option to divert gray water or divert your pipes for that gray water to go to the city sewer if you want to. So for instance, when we travel for a long time, like when we went to Rwanda for a month, we didn't want our house sitter to have to worry about draining our gray water barrel every day. Or if you want to avoid overwatering the gardens during times of heavy rain, or maybe you are washing diapers sometimes and you don't want that to divert out to the garden, you want to divert that water to the sewer, you definitely want to make sure that you have a way to change the valve so that the water diverts either to the sewer or to the outside of your house. So don't just gray water and not have the option to divert that water back to the sewer if you change your mind, or if the gray water isn't, you know, if it's not working to divert it to the outside of your house, or you didn't like it, or what have you. You want to obviously make sure that you can always switch that valve so that the water diverts to the city sewer. Now, to be clear, we did not divert the plumbing from our kitchen sink, and we did not divert the plumbing from our washing machine. So we didn't gray water the plumbing from our kitchen sink, and we didn't gray water the plumbing from our washing machine. We diverted only the sinks and showers from our bathrooms. Why? Well, even though I mean it when I say we do not throw out any of our food scraps into our garbage, never, ever, 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 ever. You will never find food waste in our garbage cans. And please listen to my food waste episodes for more on this. It's so vital. We can do so much in our own homes to divert food waste from going to landfills, which is incredibly problematic. So listen to those food waste episodes. But no waste ever goes into our garbage cans. And that includes our sink. You know, we have a garbage disposal, right? Not everybody does, but we have a garbage disposal and we don't put food waste in our sinks or in our garbage. Now, I say that. The truth is some inevitably wind up there. Some food scraps wind up in the sink, never in the garbage can. Just going to say that again. but sometimes they wind up in the sink. So like, you know, if we scrape the plate, if the plates aren't scraped enough, or we have people over and they put plates in the sink and they didn't put it in the compost, or if my teapot, you know, I've taken all the leaves out of my teapot and put them in the compost pail, but there's going to be some leaves still sticking on the side of that pot, right? They get rinsed into the sink. And mostly our cat food, our cat's food. If they didn't finish all of their food, I would not scrape that into the garbage can, because our kitchen would smell. They do get scraped into the sink, which gets scraped into the garbage disposal, which means it's going down to the sewer, right? So that's the one exception in terms of food going down the sink, if you can call the meat we feed our cats food. And it would be utterly disgusting to have that kitchen sink water that would have any of those particles, any of that food, any of that waste, the little that we do have, it would still be disgusting, especially because that's meat, go into our gardens. So you can understand that. Now, there are ways to do it. You can do it. You can figure it out. You can have a filter. You can catch things. Still, I think it would be disgusting because you're still going to have all of those pathogens and all of that, all of those pathogens from meat, in this case, going to your garden. If you don't have any meat ever going into your sink, and that's not an issue for you, then sure, you can do your kitchen. But of all of the sinks to do, that's the last one to consider. There's enough water coming from our sinks in the bathroom and our showers that we feel really good about having diverted those pipes to go out to the outside. Regarding the washing machine, the reason we didn't gray water that plumbing mostly has to do with the location of the washing machine. First of all, it's in the basement, so it's lower than where our gardens are. So gravity obviously plays a role when you're making a choice about, you know, how to divert your plumbing. So it's below ground, and we would still be able to do this for the front gardens because we have a front hillside, but really it was because the laundry room is sitting on a concrete slab. And in order for us to make the changes to the washing machine pipes and hoses and all of that, we'd have to drill out some of that concrete. And it was just labor intensive and cost intensive. And so we just decided not to do that. But we did do two bathrooms, two showers, two sinks, right? The two bathrooms we have showers, tub, and sinks. So those are the rooms we did, the two bathrooms. And it's fantastic because we shower every day and we wash our hands or brush our teeth in those sinks every day. And so we have water coming from those bathrooms every single day. We may do the washing machine at some point, and I will talk about soap. And I will talk about soapy water and what kinds of ingredients in washing machine soaps and in shampoos and soaps. And I'll talk about that also. But we may do the washing machine someday, but we will never do the kitchen. We'll never do the kitchen. However, we did our bathrooms. So as with the rain tanks, creating a diversion so that the water from our showers and sinks divert out to the outside of our house, that was simple. I'll say simple because we just paid our plumber to do it. But hooking things up to use that water, that was the hard part. And that was not our plumber's job. That was David's job again. So the pipe runs right outside to the house, right? It goes right outside. I can run my bathroom shower, and in a few seconds, I just have to go outside and I can see the pipe coming right outside the house. We were able to do it so it's coming out of a little, a window that's there for, it's not a window, but it's basically a vent for ventilation under the house. And that's where we cut a little hole and that pipe diverts right to the outside. So I can see it. I can run the water in my bathroom and I can see the water come out of our house. Okay, so you just let the water run out of the pipe and onto the ground? Well, okay, but that's not the best use of that water. It needs to be diverted once more to water the plants, or it needs to be stored. Now, to be clear, we chose the pipe coming out on the side of the house because it's all garden there. So that's why we chose what we chose. So you're going to have to figure out, if you're doing this, where that water is getting diverted to. Ours goes right to the side hillside where there are plants, but it also made it easy for us to set up a barrel there. And I'll talk about that in a second. Now, we tried every method you could think of to use that water for these plants, right? We even use, like, we got like a soaker hose. This was also on Craigslist. I got like a soaker hose. You know, soaker hose is great when you're watering plants because you want to just soak the soil itself and get right to the roots of the plants. But without pressure to push out the water from even a soaker hose, it didn't work. And that's when we decided to store it. So I started looking on Craigslist again for a barrel specifically for this gray water, and I found one. It was perfect little barrel, and I'll put pictures up again on joyfulvegan.com. A guy was selling them up in Sonoma County. This is a few years ago. I had my friends pick the tanks up for me, the barrels up for me, drive them down to us, and we've been using them ever since. Now, I say them because we bought two, but we only started using one, and it holds 60 gallons of water. So this particular barrel, 60 gallons, had a spigot at the bottom you could open and close and you can add a hose to. And on top of the barrel, half of it was open so that we could have the water pipe drain right into the barrel. Now, when I say this, I mean we still had to get like another pipe that ran from the house where it was coming out of and then run another pipe down to this barrel where it made sense for us. And again, gravity plays a role in this. But more brilliantly than just that half of that barrel being open on the top, it had a built-in sieve, like a built-in, it was able to catch any debris. And that's hugely important for the barrel for gray water. So if you get one that doesn't have an opening at the top, you got to cut an opening in the top. I'm assuming you're tank or your barrel is going to be plastic. So you can just cut an opening in the top, but you're going to want to put a sieve. You can either put one yourself or you might find a tank that already has one. Ours had one. And you absolutely need to do this. Unlike with the rainwater, which you are straining essentially before it gets into the tank because it's in the gutter. And that's why you want to keep your gutter clean. You want to make sure you have a sieve on the top of a gutter as well. And so all that's going in the tank is the water. In this case, the water's coming out the house, and in that water is going to be things like hair and things like, as I said, you know, kind of skin and whatever else goes down your drain. So you want to strain that out, because if it goes into the barrel and then you want to get the water out of the barrel, and I assume you'd want to get it out with a hose, it's going to clog up the hose and it's just going to be gross. So you want to make sure there's a sieve, a strainer on your barrel. Now, it is very interesting. We talk about, like, if slaughterhouses had walls, people would be vegetarian. Sure. I really believe in transparency when it comes to all the things we participate in. So when you do this, you really see what comes out of a drain. You see what you put into your drain and what comes out on the other side, because typically you wouldn't see it. It just goes down the drain to the sewer and you never see it again. In our case, we catch whatever, you know, solids. You know what I mean? When I say solids, it's mostly hair that comes out of the drain. I mean, it's just hair, but it's so gross when it's wet and it's like in a little pile, right? And so we have to catch it because we don't want it to go into the barrel. So I have to say, one of the most unpleasant aspects of gray watering is that, you know, it catches the hair on that sieve, on that strainer, and I just kind of like get a stick and I knock it off, and yeah, I can just put it on the ground because it's just compostable. It's just going to compost into the ground. And, you know, there's bits of soap maybe sometimes, and the hair. I even found an earring like once. So the good thing is if you ever drop a ring or an earring down the drain, you can retrieve it on the other end. You wouldn't be able to do that if it goes down to the city sewer. So that's a benefit. So water runs out from the bathroom sink or from the shower drain. Water goes down that drain to a pipe, runs out of the house, outside pipe connects to the one that runs from the house, and it drains into the 60-gallon barrel. Now, of course, we live in California. We don't have freezing temperatures, so we can do this year-round. If you live in a place that freezes in the winter, you won't be doing this in the wintertime, and that's when you're going to want to divert the water to the sewer and not to a pipe that could freeze on the outside, right? So water's in the barrel. Now what? Water's in the barrel every single day. It's not like the rain tanks where A, it gets water only when it rains, and B, that water can sit in the tank for months. This is water we collect every day, but it's water that has to be emptied every day. Every 24 hours, 48 hours tops. There are days that we kind of forget. And, you know, David, did you do it? No, I didn't do it. Okay, can you go do it? 48 hours tops. Or you are basically growing bacteria and pathogens in these little tanks, in these little barrels, which is not what you want. It's not healthy. It's not good. These are bacteria and pathogens that frankly thrive on the same nutrients that a garden would benefit from, right? But you want this feeding frenzy to take place in the soil, not in your barrel. So how do we do that? As I alluded to earlier, after much trial and error, we have a system, and this is thanks to David, that works really well. Very simple. A hose connects to the barrel. a pump connects to that hose, and another hose connects to the pump coming out on the other side of the pump that has a nozzle at the end of that hose. So I just water the garden just like you would a regular, if you just connect your hose to your house and you're getting city water. That pump allows me to basically push the pressure, the water out with pressure to run through that hose. So every day we turn the switch on that runs the pump, and I just turn the nozzle on the end of the hose, and I water the garden. And that area on that side of the house, it's more manageable than the back area. But it's also the west side of the house, so it's pretty sunny, and it's possible to do. But, you know, hand watering still takes time, but it's less time consuming than when I was trying to water the entire back garden. So, and the hose is actually very long, so I can even water the front hillside. Now, sometimes I'll just hand water and stand there and kind of water different plants. Sometimes I actually just kind of run it and put a timer on so I don't forget that it's running, because the pump will break if you just have it running without water running through it. You don't want it to do that. So sometimes I'll leave it on like a sprinkler, and it takes about 20 minutes to dump that tank, and there you have it. And we do this every day. So we use 60 gallons of water a day for our side garden from our shower and our bath water that would otherwise go straight down the sewer. Okay, 60 gallons. Is it worth it? Well, when you think about it, if you consider how much we use every day, an average household uses 20 gallons of water per shower, right? So 20 gallons of water, this is on average. This is assuming that your shower head uses 2.5 gallons of water per minute. It's about 20 gallons of water for an average shower. If you have two people in the house, it's 40 gallons. And this is just for the shower. Of course, this isn't including running water when you're brushing your teeth or washing your hands, et cetera. And of course, as I said, I'm not including the water that's in the kitchen, and I'm not including the water that's running for the washing machine, which is why I do want to do the washing machine one day. But for showers, it's 20 gallons of water per shower. Now, David and I are only two people in this house, and 60 gallons is most certainly covering both of our showers every day, as well as our use, water use in our bathrooms. Now, when I first bought this barrel, I mentioned that I bought two. It turned out that we didn't need two. 60 gallons is enough to hold the water that we're generating in our bathrooms every day, because again, that tank has to be dumped every single day. So we are not storing that water for more than 24 hours. And so a 60 gallon barrel was enough for us. And so I recently just gave that second tank away on FreeCycle, because it was just sitting in our garage. So that's how we do the gray water. That's how we store it. That's how we use that water. And it's fantastic. Now, what about the plants? Is there anything in the water, like soap or shampoo, that would be harmful to the plants, you may be asking? Unlike with the rainwater, which is just rainwater, this is something to consider when you're talking about gray water, right? Especially if you're using gray water from the washing machine. And I say that because the ingredients in soap for a washing machine is probably different than a soap that you're going to be using in your shower. The three prime suspects when you're considering what soaps to use, especially for plants when you're gray watering, are sodium, chlorine, and boron. Now, some plants you could tell right away. Some plants will be harmed right away and you can tell. Others may be damaged more slowly as elements have time to build up in the soil. But basically, if you're intending to use soapy water in the garden, you want to choose soaps and cleaners that don't contain this particular trio. And so what does that mean when you're looking at ingredients or brands? So when you're looking for salt and sodium compounds, this is pretty obvious on an ingredients list. Look for anything that says sodium, right? It's pretty easy, because salts can build up in the soil and inhibit the plant's ability to take up nutrients and to take up water. So you want to minimize the use of salts. The second one is boron. This plant basically is a microtoxin for plants. It's damaging even in small amounts, but basically, you just want to avoid products that use boron, including the laundry additive borax. Now, This is in a lot of natural ecological kind of eco products because it's non-toxic to people. So boron is what you want to consider. Again, for us, we're not using the gray water from the washing machine, so it's not an issue for us. And so we don't even think about it. And then chlorine is the last one. Again, like we're not using chlorine in our, certainly not in our showers, and we're not gray watering our washing machine, so it's not an issue, but you'll want to be considerate of that. Use hydrogen peroxide, which is fine, instead of bleach, instead of chlorine bleach. You can use hydrogen peroxide bleach instead of chlorine bleach. If you are using chlorine bleach, just divert your gray water so it goes down to the city sewer as opposed to your garden. Okay, so those are the three things to consider. Now, I guess the last one to consider is phosphorus, but your plants can absorb some amount of phosphorus. That's obviously one of the nutrients that plants need. And most soaps are pretty low phosphate, but you can look on the ingredients list as well. For the washing machine, brands like Ecos or Biopac, Oasis, these are some of the soaps that are pretty good for gray watering. There are non-detergent options like soap nuts or laundry balls, and they should be fine. Powder detergents, however, tend to be problematic because there's sodium, there's salt. And then brands like Seventh Generation, same thing. They claim to be gray water safe, but they do contain boron and salt. So again, for us, this isn't an issue because we're not gray watering our washing machine. But if we do that in the future, we're going to have to consider changes we have to make, because we do use powder detergents because we get our powder detergent in the bulk section so that we avoid packaging, you know, as much as possible. Right? It's just balancing, trying to do the right thing. But when it comes to our showers, typically shampoos and conditioners, they're not going to harm your plants. The shampoos and conditioners we use are from Plain Products or bars from Athique. And even though they contain small amounts of sodium, honestly, the products are pretty well diluted and we don't worry about it. So we just use the same products we've been using for a while, the Plain Products as well as Athique bars, and our plants have been fine. And I would know if they're not working or if they're damaging the plants, because the plants would not be thriving and they're doing just fine. So you'll just want to consider that. For the cleaners in our sinks and showers, same thing. We use mostly vinegar-based cleaners, which is fine for the garden. And we do use powdered Bonamine, which is the, you know, kind of more abrasive cleaner. It's a natural cleaner. It does contain salts in the form of Epsom salts, but it's in such small amounts that are pretty well diluted and it hasn't caused a problem. And we've been watering them with gray water now for years. So we just keep on doing it and it hasn't been an issue. Finally, one more caveat about gray water is just gray water, is that the water we use for our plants, it's all for ornamental plants, not edibles. We would not water fruits, or at least fruit shrubs, like where the fruit itself that we eat would be watered by that gray water, or certainly vegetables where you would just eat the produce that was watered with the gray water because of contamination, bacteria, pathogens. We would never do that. Possibly if we had fruit trees on the side or nut trees, because the water would just be going right into the roots and not spraying the leaves or the fruit that we would eat or the nuts that we would eat. But because it's on the side of the house, in our case, where the deer walk and we would protect the fruit trees are all in the back of our house because we would need to protect them from the deer. That's not an issue for us. But, you know, I suppose if it's fruit trees that you have and they just water the soil, that's fine. But if it's like vegetable gardens, you do not want to use gray water for your vegetable gardens or for your fruit. Rainwater would be fine. Obviously, white water is fine. Rainwater would be fine too, but not gray water. Now, one more thing related to gray water, check your city's laws. Some cities consider gray water systems a health hazard. Some cities don't. Some cities help people kind of set it up and figure it out. And if you've heard about your, you know, gray water being illegal in your city a couple years ago, check again, because most cities are kind of changing their laws around this because they know the ecological benefits of gray water systems. So check your laws. Australia, I mentioned Australia also having issues with drought and water, and New Zealand, actually, they've been ahead of the game for years. They provide local regulations, they provide guidance and education. Mexico has been using treated gray water for irrigation. So check where you live and you just do the best you can. And yet, doing the best we can for all the money and time we put into conserving water and reusing water, the truth is we have to know that we as humans in this house, we, David and I, use a tiny fraction of the water compared to the resource-intensive animal agriculture industry. Raising animals only to kill them is macabre at best, wasteful at worst. And when you look at water use alone in the animal agriculture industry, it's staggering. A single cow can drink up to 23 gallons of water daily. Humans drink up to a gallon a day. And as I mentioned, we use 60 gallons of water from our showers each day. It takes almost 1,600 gallons of water to produce 1 pound of beef. It's one of the other things I love about having the barrels and the tanks, I can see what 60 gallons looks like. When I tell you that 1,600 gallons of water to produce 1 pound of beef, can you imagine what that looks like? Right? Compared to 100 gallons for a pound of wheat. Again, I can picture what 100 gallons looks like because I have 60 gallon tanks, and I can imagine what that looks like. But 1,600 gallons of water, that's astronomical, right? And then, of course, you've got millions of additional gallons of water that's used to irrigate the livestock crops, to wash the solid and liquid waste off of concrete floors and clean blood from the slaughter equipment and other uses unnecessary in the growing and harvesting of plants. And of course, taxpayers like me and you, we carry much of the burden for water projects that benefit ranchers and the meat industry, public water projects that enable private companies to bring animals into this world only to kill them. And then you've got the animals indirectly affected by the livestock industry, removing water from rivers and streams and aquifers, pumping for irrigation, creating dams to meet the demand for more water for irrigation. It's a major cause of species decline. Lots of problems with that. The livestock industry is a private enterprise. They benefit from public government subsidies and they exploit natural resources while I'm trying to just, you know, divert 60 gallons of water a day to be able to water my gardens. So I'm aware of that. It would be very easy, very tempting to say, what's the point? Right? This is just my personal conservation methods, my zero waste aspirations, my vegan diet, that they're just a drop in the proverbial water bucket, right? So it's true, but I can't help myself, right? I just can't help myself. I know it's the right thing to do. Diverting water from our gutters to go into our rain tanks and from our bathrooms into our gray water barrel, it's better than doing nothing at all. And as you know, I like to say, don't do nothing because you can't do everything. Do something, anything. It's the right thing to do. If you ever have any questions about gray watering, I hope I've answered them all, or about rain tanks, I hope I've answered them all. You can find more information at joyfulvegan.com. You can go see photos, and I'm going to create some videos for you also so you can see how we've done this. If you ever have any questions, you know where to find me for the animals. This is Colleen Patrick-Gaudreau. Thank you for listening, and good luck with your own zero waste gray water, rainwater efforts.